All right, we'll proceed to our next case. Mr. Ballinger.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm the director of the Appellate Litigation Clinic at the University of Virginia School of Law, and it's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Benjamin Lerman and Mr. Jacob Larson, who will be presenting argument for Mr. Starbuck.
Your Honor, and may it please the court. The board acted as the final policymaking authority when it reviewed Starbuck's suspension and upheld it on changed grounds. That decision constituted an official policy for which this board could be held liable under Section 1983. The Supreme Court's precedents in Pembauer, Proprotnick, and Jett, and this court's decision in Hall, make it clear that even discrete one-off decisions can represent official policies if they are made by an official or government body with final policymaking authority under state law. Under Virginia state law, the board is the final policymaking authority with respect to short-term suspensions. It reviewed Starbuck's suspension and unquestionably had the final authority to remove it from his academic record. That suspension was a violation of our client's First Amendment rights, accomplished through a process that violated his 14th Amendment right to due process. The board's action was an official policy that violated Starbuck's rights. Therefore, the complaint did properly allege a Section 1983 violation by the board. The district court focused instead on whether the board's action was taken pursuant to a pre-existing official policy or custom, but did not recognize that the board's decision itself constituted an official policy. As Pembauer and Proprotnick made clear, and this court reiterated in Hall, Section 1983 applies where the actions of lower employees are officially sanctioned or ratified by the final policymakers, in this case, the board. A single violation is sufficient to invoke Section 1983 liability, so long as the decision maker possesses final policymaking authority with respect to the action ordered. Applying the Proprotnick principles, it is clear that the board's action constituted an unconstitutional policy for purposes of Section 1983 liability.
The board. So when we're talking about a Monell type liability for municipalities, the district court seemed to consider that there's no express policy here. And tell me where the error is in the district court making that determination, and because you seem to be going to another prong there that you think maybe the district court should have considered.
Well, yes, Your Honor, I think the crux of the error the district court made was it was looking for a pre-existing policy that the board was acting based upon when, in fact, the decision itself constituted a policy. Under Section 1983, a single decision can be considered a policy if it's made by the final policymaking authority under state law. And under Virginia law, the board is the final policymaking authority with respect to short-term suspensions. They reviewed this suspension, considered the facts, and chose, as the board, to take action ratifying that suspension, and they changed the grounds for that suspension. So that action alone, regardless of whether there was a pre-existing policy, constitutes a policy. And we see that in Pembauer, and that those principles were reiterated in Proprotnick and Jett. And we see that again in Hall, where the school board's decision to fire a teacher itself was a decision that constituted a policy.
So to be clear, you are saying essentially whether it's a policy or a pre-existing policy is one way. If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying the fact that the board was a final policy-making authority making the decision was sufficient in and of itself.
Yes, in this case, the word policy here is really, it could refer to a policy that exists over numerous decisions that's been followed over a long period of time, or it can exist for a decision that's made by the board. Ultimately, Section 1983 is meant to ensure that we're holding final policymakers or the board, we're only holding municipalities responsible for the decisions that they themselves make. And in this case, they themselves made the decision to ratify this suspension. So,
but of course, you have to allege this, or your client has to allege this in the complaint, right? And what
yes.
paragraph of the complaint do you rely on?
The complaint makes clear that
tell me the paragraph, and I'll decide whether it makes it clear.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I will pull it up right now.
Because a lot depends. I thought that what you were relying on is the school suspended Jonathan with approval from the school board.
Yeah,
is that the most direct thing you have?
So if you
look to a school board's decision?
Yeah, so if you look to Joint Appendix 13, the complaint alleged that the board considered Starbucks' appeal and found the suspension was proper. That's JA 13, that's paragraph 28, and on JA 14, paragraph 34. So the complaint does make clear that the board looked at this suspension and did ratify it, which is what...
Sorry, tell me again your citations.
JA 13, paragraph 28.
Yes.
And, JA 14, paragraph 34.
Well, I don't see, upon expiration of the allotted 30 days, the school board's policies in dealing with this, no response was received and no communications made.
When the defendant responded to the written appeal, the defendants found the suspension was proper, but altered the cause, finding that the plaintiff was a classroom disturbance. So the complaint clearly alleged that the board found the suspension proper.
The complaint doesn't say, and I don't think you maintain, that the school board issued something that clearly said that this was their action. So what you're saying is that this is sufficient. So each time you tell me that it's clearly, that, you know, you sabotage yourself. But being that as it may, let me just see. When the defendant responded to the written appeal in May, the defendants, apostrophe S, who are the defendants here?
The board, Your Honor.
Defendants found the suspension was proper.
Correct.
So, and this is a pro se complaint, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
No, I apologize for any confusion.
No. I was just being a judge.
As is your right. Applying the Proprotnick principles, it's clear that the board's action constituted an unconstitutional policy for purposes of Section 1983 liability. The board itself found Starbucks suspension proper and altered the cause to classroom disturbance. And the board is the final policymaking authority for student suspensions under state law. To get around those facts, the board has tried to append another requirement for Section 1983 liability not found in the Proprotnick principles, namely that the board cannot be held liable unless it was an active participant or moving force in the initial decision to suspend Starbucks. But the Proprotnick principles adopted by a majority of the Supreme Court in JET include no such requirement. Rather, both Pembauer and Proprotnick made clear that when the final policymaking authority reviews and approves a subordinate's decision, their ratification is chargeable to the municipality. Certainly the board's participation and approval at every stage of the suspension would be sufficient to establish liability, but it is not necessary. There is no requirement that the board be involved in the initial decision by lower officials to suspend Starbucks. The board's independent.
In the Supreme Court cases, you're going to be a good litigator because you just type talk right along. It's hard to interrupt you. So the Supreme Court cases in which you rely do not involve this higher authority, the equivalent of the school board being an active participant in the assertedly unconstitutional action, but simply approving it. Is that right?
Yes, there's language in Proprotnick that essentially says that if the final policymaking authority sanctions or orders upon review. So for instance, in Proprotnick, the court acknowledged that the Civil Service Commission was the final policymaking authority had they chosen to review an employee transfer. And obviously they wouldn't have been the one that initiated the transfer, but if they had chosen to review it, they would have been the final policymaking authority. So there's no requirement there, and certainly no requirement in the stated principles from Proprotnick that were adopted in JET and are reiterated by this court in Hall. There's no requirement.
But if we can go back to Proprotnick, which I was trying to avoid saying. Anyway, if we can go back there, then what I guess you're saying to me is that there wasn't action. And so it's not exactly like our case because you maintain that there was action by the school board. Is that right? I mean, it's the way you described the Supreme Court case. The court was saying if they had acted, they would have been the final decision maker.
Yes, well, I think it's very common for municipalities, local governments, and all places to give a certain amount of discretion to lower officials, but reserve the right to intervene as the final authority if they choose to do so.
And okay, so what I'm asking you is the intervention necessary to make them the final decision maker for purposes?
Yes, Your Honor.
You didn't have that decision, that situation in Brabognik, right?
Correct. And the court essentially said that because that they did not act, no final policymaking authority acted, in that case, the plaintiff lost. But had they chosen to intervene at that point, they would have opened themselves up to Section 1983 liability. And here, the board did choose to intervene. And as a result, they have opened themselves up to Section 1983 liability because they have spoken as the board and as the final policymaking authority. And that constitutes a policy for purposes of Section 1983.
Counsel, you said the board chose to intervene. Wasn't that a part of their due process effort to intervene or to make a decision?
Your Honor, that may be true. The record is silent on whether the board was required here to intervene. There could be a policy that they have that they must respond to written appeals. Our client made a written appeal to the board, and they did respond to that appeal.
That's what I'm saying. In this case, you say that they chose to intervene. That's a little bit of an overstatement there. They were responding to your client properly, asking them to review it. So now, do you equate a decision-making under those circumstances to a policy? Weren't they trying to decide an incident that already had happened, in fact, punishment that had already been meted out, and trying to make a decision as to whether or not those facts constituted something? You equate that decision-making process to a policy?
Yes, Your Honor, and a few points on that. First, the language in Proprotnick and Pembauer is clear that where a final policymaking authority subjects a lower decision to review and then ratifies or sanctions that order, they are then liable for the consequences of that order if it violates the constitutional rights, my client's constitutional rights. Secondly,
they didn't ratify nor sanction it because the grounds on which the suspension was carried out. They said no. It was a disturbance.
Well, Your Honor, and
it was not a threat. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your argument is counter to the facts of your case. Right?
Well, I think there is, and I think the discovery would be very helpful here. There is some question over whether the board changed completely the grounds for this from threats to classroom disturbance, in which case they would be acting independently, in which case they're even, you know, I think in both scenarios, they're liable for their action, whether they ratify.
The board can look at the facts and say, under the facts here, while it does not constitute a threat, we have determined in our adjudicative function that it constitutes a disturbance.
Certainly they can, Your Honor. And in that case, they would still be open to Section 1983 liability as it's still an action that constitutes a final policy by the board.
So that means that under your, it'd be a thin protection under Monell to say that every time something occurs that they have to opine about in a review circumstance, they're putting themselves on the line and saying their policy is at stake if they look at the facts and say, it is or isn't. I mean, Monell would have very little. It would have to be a tiger without teeth, wouldn't it?
Well, Your Honor, that if they review the decision and approve it as they did in this case, at that point they are articulating policy as the board that the student should be suspended in this case.
They're not approving policy. They're looking at facts to determine whether or not it constitutes. You would agree that a school can discipline a student for threats, correct?
Certainly.
You also agree that they could discipline students for disturbances, correct?
Certainly.
Well, when matters come before them in terms of the factual allegations and what happened, why wouldn't the board just be in a situation like a court? I'm trying to determine, policy would be, listen, you can suspend them for wearing a T-shirt that says, America's a great country. Then that would be a policy that would set forth broader parameters. But you just conceded that disturbance and threat are both within the parameters of New Jersey in the PLO, in loco parentis and all those things like that they still have. But don't you circumvent Monell on that extent of your argument?
Ultimately, Your Honor, I feel that the decision to discipline him under the facts of this case, they essentially were saying that the speech that my client gave or that my client engaged in was subject to punishment. And we feel under the First Amendment that was protective speech. And by reviewing and approving that suspension, they violated his rights. And the suspension itself, and I see that my time has expired, if I could just briefly close.
Sure.
One of the great harms to my client here is that this suspension remains on his academic record and will appear when he applies to graduate schools, potentially in jobs in the future. And the board ultimately had the final authority to remove that from his record and chose not to. So that injury was ongoing and was ultimately the result of the board's decision here not to remove it. So the injury suffered here is absolutely a result of the board's action and therefore should be subject to 1983 liability. And with that, I will close. Thank you, Your Honor.
Let me ask you one last question on what you just said there. If the board at this point would acquiesce and remove it from his record, would that end this case?
Yes, Your Honor. That would be that is the remedy that we are most seeking in this case.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Capps.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Jeremy Capps on behalf of the Williamsburg James City County School Board.
Sir, could you address what my colleague just asked? Would the school board just consider withdrawing this suspension?
So the...
Or removing it from his record, essentially.
So, yes.
In light of what's here. And the reason it's being brought up is, you know, if something happens adverse, this continues to move along. It just seems to me what's being asked, and I don't know, when you look at the conduct that actually occurred here, it's really hard to find something that happened here that was in all candor, and I think we probably all look at it and says probably nothing should have happened here. And the question is maybe it's a point of pride or maybe it's something here that's going on, but why wouldn't you just remove it from the record? And then that, as I just heard, that ends this.
Well, Your Honor, one, I can't speak to that issue because that hasn't been presented to my client, although it's certainly one that would be considered. If we look at the amended complaint, that isn't the remedy that Mr. Starbuck asked for. He asked for an injunction requiring the school board not to enforce certain policies. And he also asked for a declaration with respect to declaring that the school board through its policies and the high school through its actions violated and continues to violate constitutional rights. So it seems to me
that if, you know, in light of, and I respect where you're going from in terms of what's being asked for, sounds like to me he's no longer in that situation, the school or whatever, but it seems to me that at least at this point there's something for you to consider possibly. Is the question that if in fact that is the case, that we're simply removing from the record and that can be done, you just might be able to take care of this case before we put a lot of work into what we're doing here. But go ahead and proceed.
That's understood, Your Honor. And I can discuss that with my client if that's the position of Mr. Starbuck as it goes forward. And I think that goes to the point that on our motion to dismiss, and the district court agreed that the policies that were alleged in the amended complaint did not state a cause of action under Monell. And
I don't know that the suggestion that you remove this from the records, it goes one way or the other towards the Monell claim, if that's what you're suggesting.
It is not. What I am saying though is, based on the facts alleged in the amended complaint, it was our position that the allegations could not and did not state a Monell cause of action against the school board. And the district court agreed with that the policy.
No, I do understand that. But if you went back now, who would be making the decision? The school board, right?
It would be the school board or an authorized representative. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, it couldn't be without the consent of the school board, right?
Correct. Correct, Your Honor. But what I hear now on in the briefs and on appeal is that the Mr. Starbuck no longer relies upon the policies that were alleged in the complaint.
Sure, he does. All we're doing now is talking about the Monell point, I thought. And his whole argument is that you can have a Monell action when the final decision maker makes the decision and is the person in charge, as your school board is.
Correct.
But you don't need a separate policy, that to the school board, the final decision maker is the person that's making the decision, and then that is the policy. That equals a policy, a pre-existing policy. So how does settling the case affect that?
I don't think that it does, Your Honor.
Okay, then I misunderstood your argument.
I don't think that it does, and if I suggested that, I apologize, because that was not my point. I think there's two separate points. One is certainly we can address the issue of with Mr. Ballinger if that is the request to resolve the case. If, however, the case were to
let me also just sort of look at it in terms of, I don't know what the plaintiff's situation is, but apparently he proceeded in this matter pro se. This court is kind of look very liberally at complaints filed by pro se litigants. And, we look at it in terms of all of the facts. Now, what we do know is I think we could probably establish by law that the school board is the final policy making decision, the authority for policy making. The question is, did it make a decision may arise? It seems back where we're going back and forth on that. And you probably could get something out of it. We know they did certain things. They even intervened in participating in this post suspension meeting at the school with the student. And there are certain things they did do. And when we look at this, I'm just saying, when you look at a case like this, and then you look and we're talking law and we're dealing with in terms of policy, but then it is not wrong to go back and look at what actually did happen here and why doesn't someone just fix this? This case screams for it. I mean, it's not like you've got, who wants to defend themselves against what this student said in the context of it and the conduct that occurred to him? And I don't know what the student's situation is, but I noticed his brother represented. He's a single mom. And I just can't imagine this happening to a child who goes to school who probably has a different situation. I don't know what his economic situation, but it doesn't sound good. And he's put in a situation that it would appear to me most students with vigorous parental and significant representation would not have faced this kind of situation. And I don't know what the situation is. I don't, as I say, I don't know about why it was the brother. I know initially the brother was in it and the brother's dropped when it became of age, the defendant came of age. But there's some facts here that are not very favorable, even if the school board prevails, that I think you just, I don't know, maybe it just seems to me, you just ought not to, this doesn't sound like something you should fight for if, and like you say, you don't know at this point what is on the table. And it sounds like to me, if that's on the table, that might be something you would consider. And I just throw that out because I think that's important for this case. And we'd like to resolve cases and move forward and be adversarial, but there are points in which you are fighting a battle that it doesn't, even if you win, you don't win on this. And I don't know if you disagree with me on that or agree, but I'd like to hear.
Well, I appreciate your point. The issue though, for schools is an important one and one, a societal one, which is teachers and administrators are put in very difficult positions when there are discussions or talk about violence in schools and they have to ask.
Speak to this violence that you say is happening and all that you say seems to be some big threat. I want to look back at the facts of what this student actually did. He was, I guess, describing. I mean, this isn't a situation where he makes a threat that directly. You've really got to read something into this to make something out of it.
Well,
and the context of it. So, I mean, what you just described, I agree with it. You school boards have that authority. But what happened here probably happens every day in a classroom in some kind of context. I mean, it seemed to be rather light, but the reaction was pretty severe.
Well, I would disagree, Your Honor, and here's why.
Well, let's make sure we're disagreeing on what did he actually do? What happened.
Right. So it was the day after the shooting and school shooting in Florida. And that has to have some context, right?
Sure. It does.
So it is concerning that we had a school shooting of multiple students in Florida. The allegation is he was discussing that shooting in class, talked about that.
With whom?
Other students, talked about the way that the shooter could have accomplished more damage.
What did he say? Now, this is disgusting. There are a bunch of kids in school just talking about a shooting that happened somewhere else. And what did he say?
The allegation, and that's a JA 10, number 11, is that he made remarks questioning the intent of the shooter, stating that the shooter would be capable of more harm had he wanted to, noting his possession of explosives, and considering the time the shooter was left alone in the building unchallenged by local law enforcement.
What's false about anything he just said? That someone says, well, you know, that guy down in Florida, he could have done more damage. And he had explosives. He could have done that. What's threatening in giving an opinion about something that happened down in Florida to some fellow students?
Well, again, in the context of a school shooting where people are on edge and on edge for copycats, and that's just the reality of what happens with school.
Do you have any indication that situation existed here? Any indication that there was some copycat or I mean, all he got is an opinion. He's just making an opinion. This guy down there could have done more damage. He had explosives. He could have done this. And from that, you leak to, well, that's a threat. And now it's suspended.
Well, what I do say is a teacher overheard those remarks and was concerned enough about those remarks to not only report it to her administrators, but also the police. And so,
what did the police find?
So the police investigated, sure,
right,
under the allegations, and determined that there were no criminal charges.
No threats.
They said it was
not violated Virginia law.
Right. So no criminal charges. But that doesn't mean that it can't be inferred from the allegations that the teacher who overheard those remarks was concerned. And the law isn't that a school administrators can't issue a suspension, a short-term suspension for disturbances in the classroom. There's a difference.
Well, counsel, suppose the student had said, while talking to his fellow students, I can't understand why he did a thing like that. I can't, and said that 10 times in a row. I can't understand why he did a thing like that. Couldn't the teacher be concerned about the student or about what he said?
I suppose, but I think that's a different context than what the...
No, the context is in her mind, because that's what you're basically saying. You said this is justified because she was concerned, whether it was a threat or not, she was concerned. And maybe so, but you could be concerned there. You said he repeats, I don't know why he did it. So you're concerned. Well, you take him down to the office. Are you okay, son? Are you all right? Are you concerned? You bring in the police officer there. But then it goes to you suspend him for 2 days for something that clearly is no threat. Now, concern, a teacher, you can look, that's how teachers are, at least when I was in school. You could have your head down on your desk and weepy. And the teacher said, I'm concerned about you. Because that's what we love about our teachers. They're concerned about their students. But you can't transport concern to the point now you're going to kick the kid out of school for 2 days. That's what I'm
saying. Have it on his permanent record.
Oh, put it on his permanent record, too. Forever he has a scarlet letter on his, literally on his record.
Well, that, but again, it goes to what the school and the process that it goes through, the teacher is concerned. And I also note in the amended complaint, the plaintiff alleges that at one point in the discussion, and this is in the first paragraph of the complaint, amended complaint, he noted the possession of explosive devices by the shooter, the use of a fire alarm to lure students out, and noted the time it took for law enforcement to enter, in addition to what I read earlier. That's different than saying
wasn't that all that was reported in the news? He didn't know this stuff. He'd never been to Florida. He's just saying what the guy had explosive. He took time to do all. I mean, he is really saying, let me tell you, there's something going on here. And this doesn't make any sense to me because I just cannot believe. I don't know this student, but there's something about this student that causes this thing to be elevated. A student that's a model student, I'm not saying he is, or comes from an established family, I do not believe any way in the world this would have happened. There's something about this student while this was taken to this level, and maybe the record doesn't bring it out, but it has an air of there's something going on here. You don't do a student like this unless you have some reason or something about that student that makes you think that student would do it. And what is about this particular student? Because in an average student, you would think, well, that's just talking about it. But what about this student made this teacher and the board and others think we ought to suspend him for 2 days?
So again, that is not alleged in the amended complaint. And so
there must be something, but tell us, got to be something, because you can't believe any, if it was one of our kids or someone that you wouldn't think for one moment, you'd fight this all day long. That kid would never get out of school. And I'm trying to figure out what is it about this student that caused this kind of reaction to call the police. And even after the police comes and says, you say they say those criminal charges because that's what they do, but they did an investigation. Really, they didn't. If they thought it was a threat or anything, they would have to act, because the kind of seriousness you're talking about, that's not the school board's concern. That's police, law enforcement. If he is talking about or disrupting things, talking about a shooting, and you think there's a chance of it, that's law enforcement. They looked at it and just said, oh, this is nothing. But someone in that school system, felt like because of this particular student, there's something about him that's really troubling. And maybe the record doesn't show it now, but at some point in time, that has to come out.
So the record doesn't, as alleged in the amended complaint, but what we do know from the amended complaint is that the local administrators of the high school followed the Supreme Court's guidance for due process in short-term suspensions, because they brought him in, they had him talk with a counselor, they had him talk with a principal, they, according to the alleged complaint, had him talk with a psychologist. During the day that this was reported. And as a result, they issued a 2-day suspension, a short-term suspension, and called mom and told her about it. And so the decision that the school administrators made at the time did comply with the process, according to the alleged complaint, the due process requirements of the
school officials said that he was really suspended for his own safety.
The allegation,
I'm saying in terms of what the vice principal said there, didn't he say he's suspending him for his own safety?
No. So what
the retaliation by other students?
No. So what the amended complaint says is he was held for 3 class periods during this initial investigation. He calls that in-school suspension, as alleged in the complaint. The complaint then alleges that the assistant principal, and I'm on JA 11 at 18, the assistant principal contacted his parent, notifying her of the out-of-school suspension. And then on the next page, JA 12 at 19, it says, when questioned about the quote-unquote in-school suspension, that was the three-hour period during this, where he talked with the counselor and the psychologist, the principal said that he was in this three-hour in-school suspension, this period, for his own safety. It doesn't reference the out-of-school suspension. The allegations are mom was given the reason or told of the out-of-school suspension. So it's two different things. I see that my time's up.
Sir, I take your point about procedural due process, but doesn't he have a First Amendment claim?
So he doesn't. One, the district court agreed that the policies in play, as alleged in the complaint, there were two policies. One, that we didn't comply with a long-term suspension policy, which is not the issue here. And two, that there was some form of policy to continue investigations, but no facts to suggest that. That did not rise to a policy of the school board that could
create. But this all goes back to your Monell argument. Suppose you lose the Monell argument, then he's alleged First Amendment claim.
Well, if this court were to decide that there was a Monell issue, then that the school board engaged in a policy that implicated
the school board's decision, because this is the argument. The school board, because it is the final decision maker, what it decides is the policy for the institution.
Right.
So taking that as what would be the conclusion.
Yeah. So it's our position, and as we set out in the brief, that's not the case here, because
it's not the case. I'm asking you to assume that that's what we hold. Then, if that is what we hold, then hasn't he alleged a First Amendment claim?
If you hold that the school board made the final decision on his suspension, then yes, it could be a policy maker. However, Judge Gregory, as he pointed out, is it's just a review of the decision. The decision was already made by the school administrators.
Yeah, but we're speaking across purposes. You may be totally right, but suppose you're not. Suppose he has alleged a Monell claim against the school board. Then does he allege a First Amendment claim?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I appreciate that.
I want to be clear on that, where that was going. What Judge Motz is alluding to is that, and maybe the trial judge seemed to have gotten confused, you know, to allege a claim against a municipality, you can have an express policy, but there are other ways in which you can get municipal liability. It's an or, and that or that she's referring to is through the decisions of a person with final policy-making authority. The law is very clear that the board is a final policy-making authority. Then when you say they made a decision, that's municipal liability. But whether it constituted something that's actionable is another thing, but it falls under Section 1983. There are at least a couple other ways you can do it. Those two are not implicated here at all. But the trial judge relied upon the first one in saying there's no policy. Well, that's one way. But the point being is there's more than one way. And that's why that question went in that vein and asked, if we found that one, then would a First Amendment right? And your answer, I think, seems to me to be correct. Yes, it would be a First Amendment violation.
Alleged First Amendment violation.
Alleged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Understood. And the point, and we tried to distinguish this in the briefs, is this suspension already happened. It was a short-term suspension. It wasn't a ratification theory. The district court didn't get it wrong, and it wasn't alleged in the amended complaint this way. And if you look at what the amended complaint says, what he says is, by changing the rationale, he didn't say it was a First Amendment violation. He said it was a Fifth Amendment, and even liberally construing that, what he's saying is it's a due process violation. And that's what's alleged in the complaint. And that's why
I asked you about the First Amendment. Anyway, I just think we're, as I say, I don't think we need to.
But then I apologize if I appear to be talking past you, and I was trying to answer your question, but our position is what was alleged in the amended complaint is not a First Amendment violation. They didn't allege that. What Mr. Starbuck alleged is by considering it and changing the rationale, we violated the Fifth Amendment, which is a due process under federal law, but even liberally construed, a due process claim, not a First Amendment claim.
Mr. Counsel, before you go, just would you help me on this? Okay, let's assume that it seemed like a lot of evidence, I mean, a lot of facts would point to that there's no policy really involved here, but it's a question of, as Judge Wynn said, the other side of how it can be effectuated by decisions or some otherwise being involved in it. It looks like now, and I think that's why it started like this with you, my dear colleagues and friends were asking you about, ultimately, in this case now about the fact that it's on its permanent record, and the board decided that this was a disturbance, and their action is that it stays on his record. Now, would you agree for due process now here, was he given an opportunity to weigh in on whether or not what was at first told him to be a charge of threat, they decided that it constituted disturbance without giving him an opportunity to speak to that?
Well, what I think the allegations show in the
I'm talking about the facts of the cases, we know them. Didn't they? Was he there? Was he allowed to say, well, I'm here to defend threat, if, for example, or I'm talking about the threat charge. And then somehow it morphed into a disturbance, and without his having his chance to, am I right? Was he given a hearing?
So it's my understanding there was not a hearing. What he did is file a written appeal of the school administrator's decision, and the school board looked at his written appeal, and essentially they said it's a lesser version. They didn't change or create a quote unquote new charge that he couldn't respond to. He responded to the assertions, the allegations, and even the amended complaint alleges that it didn't rise to threats. What they said is, no, it's a classroom disturbance. So there's not a different circumstance with which he would have had to respond for due process purposes.
Or really? It's not a lesser included offense because they had the same charge. They said the same punishment. The disturbance was 2 days too.
Well, right? in the first paragraph, yes, you're correct that the suspension stayed in place. The allegations in the first amended complaint in the first paragraph said the remarks could not be supported as threats, but were instead determined to be a classroom disturbance. That's unlike the cases that Mr. Starbuck cited in his brief, the Newsom Sixth Circuit case, where it was a long-term expulsion hearing and he was not provided with new evidence, a confession statement for that purposes. Here, there's not an allegation of new evidence or some form of new conduct that he needed to respond to.
Yes, it is, because when you say a threat, that comes from what you said. When you say disturbance, that means you've enlarged that the fact there must be something that somebody else reacted to it. The disturbance comes from an outside, right? I mean, other students. There was nothing before him that he had that it was just a threat. You can make a threat in an empty room. And that's a threat, but a disturbance is something different. So implicitly, it must have been more. And see, if you get past Monell on the due process, the board is going to have to defend this on that. You can find, acting reasonably, you can find a disturbance from what he did. Right? That's what your client will be faced with. Find a disturbance out of what he said. And there's no evidence that any student acted out at this point. So that certainly can't be done as a matter of law to dismiss it. You don't have any facts. You have to have discovery. All of those things, don't you?
Your client may have,
if we say at the very least on due process, you got a Monell question.
Right. And I would disagree. And as a short-term suspension, the allegations in the amended complaint show that he got the process, due process that was required. And that's the board's decision.
And that might be a stronger case if all they did was suspended him for 2 days. But when you put it on this record forever, that makes it more than short term. You have made it by punishment long term. Because that's the rest of his life. People go back to his record in school and say, look, you disturbed the school. And that's the more in this case. It seemed like it's not getting to you. That's the more. And the board is solely in the midst of that more.
And I appreciate that point, Your Honor. Again, when we were in the district court on a amended complaint that did not ask for that, but asked for an injunction and declaration, it's a different position.
Yeah,
but
of course you are a lawyer too. You can think up, maybe they should have presented it, but you settle cases all the time. One side presents one situation, another side presents, well, no, what about this? I hear you, but I'm not persuaded.
Yeah, I understand, and I appreciate that position, Judge.
Let me be clear in understanding your statement. I think you said they did not allege a First Amendment violation. Is that what your position? In other words, they didn't say something to the effect that the decision made by this defendant had infringed upon the right of free speech as protected by the First Amendment of the United States.
So the allegation in paragraph 28 states that they found the suspension proper but altered the cause.
Is there a paragraph 34?
And then it says this action was in violation of the Fifth Amendment.
Is that paragraph 34?
Sure, and I see that. What does
that paragraph say?
That says the defendant's decision for infringement or decision for suspension infringed upon the free speech rights. But based on the allegations in the complaint, in the amended complaint, that decision and the facts all relate to the school administrator's decision to issue this short-term suspension. And that was the position of the school board. As we set out in the briefs, the board didn't ratify that decision based on those allegations.
Based on those allegations, it did, because it put the sword of Damocles on his head forever. That's the whole point of prescriptive speech. You're saying now this is the result, allegedly, this is the result of what happens when you speak this way. It's on your permanent record. And believe me, for a student, that's a death penalty. That's about as much as close to a death penalty as you can, because it's saying when you leave these hallowed halls, that will follow you. Just like people brag about being Phi Beta Kappa and Order of the Coif and all those things, it's the other side of that coin. This is the scarlet letter that Hawthorne talked about. The analogy, it is. That's the difference in this case. It's not just a short-term suspension. And the board is right in the mix of that. That's the key. I don't want to, you've gone through it all, but when you're responding to the question, it seems like, you know, you don't get that part of it. It's not just confined to short-term. And if that's a policy, you can take short-term suspensions and turn them into permanent records. That's another question too. Is that policy? So again, those are things that, as Judge Wynn alluded to, may come out if this case goes further. But anyway, so you know your case, and you obviously, you've done well and argued it. We've peppered you quite a bit here, and you held your ground well, and appreciate that. But anyway, we'll move on.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Larson.
Thank you, Your Honor. We just have a few points. First, we agree completely that threats is different than a classroom disruption. Those require different evidence in order to rebut them, and thus the Starbuck was denied his due process requirements under DOS. Second, his primary relief that he seeks is to have his records expunged. He's also seeking declaratory and injunctive relief, and we would have to speak with our client in order to determine whether he could, that the settlement would be possible, but we are very open to having that conversation. Third.
Retreating from what your colleague said, that if they removed this from his record, the case would go away.
We would have to talk to him, Your Honor, about what he would really want, but it seems that his primary desire is to have that scarlet letter on his permanent record removed. And so as a result, that would probably finish the case.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you,
Your Honor. Furthermore, regarding the First Amendment claim, the board has failed to explain how Starbucks' statements as described in the amended complaint, which seem to be discussing a current event that unfortunately is important to a lot of high school students, meet that demanding standard under Mahanoy for speech that a school official can restrict. When we look at cases where school officials are allowed to restrict speech where it's found unprotected, like in Weinar, Winooski, and JR, there were concrete threats of violence targeting children for murder and rape. Or in Kowalski, a student created a website targeting another child, calling her a slut, and that had implications in the classroom for that student. Or finally, we have Hardwick, where a student was told to remove a Confederate shirt in a school that had a history not just of racial tensions, but racial tensions relating to clothing. This isn't those kind of cases. This is a case more like Newsom v. Albemarle, where the student was wearing a shirt that reminded a school official of the recent Columbine shooting, but wearing that shirt was found to be protected. Or in Tinker, where the students were protesting an ongoing war that was affecting other students and rendering those students and killing those students, but that was found to be protected. So from the facts alleged in the amended complaint, there are certainly more facts, more context that could be discovered if we were to get to discover it. But from the facts alleged in the amended complaint, we simply don't reach that standard under Mahanoy. Even if some of the things he said were perhaps caused discomfort, because as the court held in Mahanoy, there's always going to be discomfort that accompanies an unpopular opinion. And so that cannot simply be the standard for what loses protection. Regarding municipal liability, as the court held in Pembauer, the Supreme Court held in Pembauer, even a single decision can create municipal liability. In fact, the court said that would be contrary to the very purpose of Section 1983 to not allow it. And so a one-off decision like this by the board as a final policymaking authority, rendering a decision as the area where state law, Virginia Statute 22.1-277.04, grants it authority over, means that that decision can create liability under Monell. They are certainly protected in other capacities under qualified immunity. The employees of the school may not be able to create liability under Monell, but for that decision where they had final policymaking authority and that they made a decision as a result of that authority, they can create liability for themselves. And they did here through their violation of clear constitutional rights, Starbucks' constitutional rights, for punishing him for his protected speech and then for giving him and rendering a decision that used another basis for his punishment than the one that he was told prior and giving him no opportunity to respond to it. If I am happy to answer any questions you may have, Your Honor, but if not, I believe we've said enough.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Ballinger and students. I note that you're court appointed, and I appreciate that not only is the assistance you give to our court, Judge Wynn knows it very well, being a part of that committee, and we really couldn't do our job without that. And even more so, you bring it to the academy and have fine young law students to come before us. And I say that the Cavaliers acquitted themselves very well today, as well as Mr. Capson representing his client very ably. We can't come down and greet you as we'd like to, but know very much. And we appreciate your being here and for your fine arguments. So we wish you well, and please be safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.